folks. So I decided to have a bit of a talk about some of the trends that I see on the internet and some of the ways that we're processing information and conspiracy theories and things like that. And I think when people see the title of this video, they might assume that I'm saying like everybody just go back to sleep, everybody take the blue pill. I'm not really talking about politics here, but more the sort of the culture and the mindset that people are adopting or being forced into because of the internet. And I thought I would begin by telling a story that to sort of set the scene, as it were, that in the mid-90s, when I was still a teenager, I used to take acid, North Tyneside, where I lived. And there was one time when I did it that I had a bad, what they called a bad trip. And what it really amounted to was a sort of paranoid episode. It was purely psychological. It was purely mental, where you assume that everybody around you is in on some kind of plot against you. This is actually common, and it's a terrible thing to go through as well. And what it kind of does is put you in a mode, or put me in a mode. Like I say, this is a long time ago now, decades ago, but it puts you in a mode where you're in at the center of a plot or a conspiracy. And you find it very, very difficult to find a way out. It's as if you're trapped in a labyrinth. And whenever you think you've found a way out, it is a sort of trap door opens and you fall down to another layer of the maze. Another kind of riddle presents itself to you. And I thought that all of the people in the area where I lived, and then sort of by extension that went on, and were in a plot against me. And it began with my immediate friends who I used to do acid with. And I kind of thought, well, they've done something to me here. And the evidence that I had for that was the fact that I was clearly and obviously having some kind of psychotic break. And it was that, well, because I'm having that, then they must have done something. And then because everybody else was acting as if nothing had happened, I then assumed that they must be in on it as well. So what began to happen was that the framing, this the scale of the plot just began to sort of expand exponentially. And I began to sit there and stew in me pot. It lasted for days. And I began to sit there and stew in me pot, thinking about everything that I'd said to everybody over the previous few months, in an attempt to kind of find somebody who was not in on it, if you were. And eventually I went away for actually a good few weeks to sort my head out. It was a terrible thing to go through. But what was really so horrible about it was that you, when you're trying to piece together all of the bits of the puzzle, your rational mind is kicking in and coming to conclusions that, based on certain outcomes, like the fact that I seem to have gone bonkers, which were not actually true, or, and this is the worst part of it, the uncertainty that perhaps it was true. And then there's the not knowing part of it. And so on the one hand, you want the truth of the matter, but on the other hand, which would be, was this a plot? Was I set up? Because I am having some kind of episode, so was this done on purpose? Because there was a lot of nasty things used to go on a council estate in North Tyneside in the 90s, I'll tell you that. But whatever the case, your mind tries to piece together pieces of the puzzle so that you can try and find your way out of a maze and you can try and get to the truth of the matter. And it never really happened until a few years later. By that time, I'd kind of turned me back on all that crap. And I was sitting in a pub, and it was let slip on one drunken night in a pub that it was let slip that, in actual fact, there was something funny went on. There was Some mind games went on, and some dirty little tricks that these people knew would set somebody away who was under the influence of that drug. And so you get a kind of a bit of catharsis, but eventually you have to throw your hands up and you just say, "Well, actually, I'm not really sure what the hell happened there. I'm just pleased I got through it." And I think about that more and more these days when I kind of come into contact with internet culture, in internet, particularly the conspiracy side of it. But the problem is, where I think the internet's moving into a certain mode where almost everything is a conspiracy. And it just so happens that I was flicking around on YouTube the other day, and I came across an old documentary called Chariots of the Gods, which was in the early 2000s. You had these series on the television on cable things. And it was all about ancient aliens, and it was all about the aliens who built the pyramids. And what they were getting at was that there's about the ancient world, there's certain mysteries that we can't really explain. And it's funny because in the age of the internet and the sort of hyper conspiracies now, you never really hear about this very much anymore. Yet you can actually go to Egypt or South America or Easter Island. And you can actually find these things which are there, which people are not really sure how they were built. Like, how actually were the pyramids? Did we ever solve that mystery? How did they build them? And what you find is that in the Chariots of the Gods was an older book by Daniken, I think he was called, a Swissman. And he kind of put these pieces together and thought, well, if you have a look at all of the symbols and all of the engravings, if you have a look at those weird markings on the ground, etched into the earth of South America, then all of this points to an actual advanced alien civilization landing on the earth, telling these people how to do that, primitive humans, ancient human cultures. And then you can see all across various depictions of what seems to be aliens or astronauts or this worship of the sky or the expectation that this alien race is going to return from the sky and all of this kind of thing. And you see that there's something similar there. You can see that there's something similar in the human mind where, in the case of late modernity, somebody writes a book and is like, well, there's all these things we can't really explain. But if I go back and I look at it all in a certain way, my mind can start and piece the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle can be slotted together and click into place. And the picture that I can form is one in which aliens arrived on the earth and taught humans how to build pyramids or in South America with the Incas and whatnot, all of these walls where you don't need cement and it's all very, very specific and very, very like geometrically brilliant. And so, but then when you go back further again, you take a look at these cultures themselves, you can see that, well, they were in the same predicament. If you try and think of the world from the perspective of an Egyptian 5,000 years ago, what was it that they had close to hand? What was it that they had as a frame of reference? And it would be like things like the sky, the sun, and the various gods that they had. And so their minds were also trying to piece together all of these bits of the puzzle. And I thought this was very strange because this was a more older and kind of half forgotten internet theory, which was on the internet in the earlier days. But you can see that pattern over and over again of, well, I have certain sort of fragments of information, and I'm going to try and slot it all together and come to a certain conclusion. And I thought that was interesting when you have a look at something that's happened this week, when you get into the conspiracy as it is now, as we process information is now, because outside of a Donald Trump trial in New York recently, somebody called Maxwell Azzarello set himself on fire outside of the courthouse where Trump was inside. And like this is becoming a recurring thing. You had the other one recently, which I wrote about on Substack, where he was about the Palestine thing. But this new one, he actually wrote a sort of manifesto of sorts, or at least a long essay on Substack about why he was going to do it, like what his thinking was. And I'll go through some of this here because it's actually quite eerie. And he said this is him. And with all this, a sharp rise in apocalyptic messaging. So he's talking about the general zeitgeist. He's talking about the age that we live in. And he says, climate change will kill us all. COVID will kill us all. Vaccines will kill us all. AI will kill us all. No matter the bubbles we ascribe to, we're bombarded with existential crises with no solutions. We've seen a surge in apocalyptic film, literature, and video games that tell us there is no way out of our poor circumstances, but total societal breakdown. Zombies tell us that the public is our enemy. If you go to the nearest convenience store, you can buy a can of water called Liquid Death. And he is right here. There is a sort of apocalyptic vibe in the ether, in the zeitgeist, to the culture that we have these days. I actually think the internet's got a lot to do with it. But you can see here that he's really absorbing social media messaging. He goes on and he says, this is our rotten farce. For our entire lives, we have been flooded with media designed to slowly steer us into a world where the American dream was dead, where the public was fully divided against itself, where everybody believed we were powerless to do anything about our worsening circumstances. It is all so they can organize an unprecedented apocalyptic rug pull on the entire populace as they pivot to fascism, which is perhaps best understood as kleptocracy at the barrel of a gun. And what he's getting at here is that there's a conspiracy afoot by the elites involving, like, according to him, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are actually good friends. All of the Clintons are in on it, all of the Hollywood stars are in on it, and especially the tech bro sort of crypto guys. And they've set up this huge Ponzi scheme with using crypto, and they're going to sort of collapse it all and then rob the public and then use the chaos to bring in what he calls like a fascist state. And you can see there's kind of now one of the things about this that I thought was interesting is that this could kind of float down my timeline on Substack or on YouTube or whatever, any day of the week, and it's not that far away from a lot of people that I follow, or a lot of sort of in the nodes of the network of the internet. It's not that far away, but they would not be saying it was a fascist coup, because then they would sort of they wouldn't like that kind of language because it has ideological connotations, and it makes him sound like a leftist and this kind of thing. But the point here is that he is then being exposed to all of this information, and he too is piecing together all these little shards of information to try and create a picture of the world which makes sense, which is a coherent, well-formalized, well-thought-out. He gets it. So that, yeah, he gets it. He understands the world as it is. And the problem that I have with all of this, in this kind of fracturing that we see of the internet, is that, well, everybody thinks this. So he would think that people in my node of the network were wrong. The channels and the other sort of internet pundits who are adjacent to me, he would agree with them on some things, but he would, this Maxwell fella, he would say that, well, they kind of get it, but they don't. But at the same time, like, I'm looking at his manifesto, and so my audience, and I'm thinking, well, he kind of gets it, but he doesn't. But the problem is, for him, that will be a completely coherent world picture, whereas we've all got our own. And so, how do you actually assert Which is the correct one? How do you actually assume how everybody thinks they're right? And what's weird is that everybody will think everybody else is a normie, basically, because everybody's got their own truth. I'll just go on a little bit more. He says, why is Stanley Kubrick's comedy about mutually assured destruction called Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb? Because he was a cocky secret fascist who was getting us to stop worrying and love the bomb, why did he make A Clockwork Orange? So we'd rejoice at ultra-violence designed to desensitize us to the horrors of the world. Now, you see, once again, if you look at these Stanley Kubrick, he's kind of coming at it from the perspective that Stanley Kubrick was in on the conspiracy with the elites. But you can flip that and you can say, well, if you look at Stanley Kubrick's work, he was actually telling us. He was actually telling us about the conspiracy. You can say that Clockwork Orange was there to tell us where all of this was going. You can say that Space Odyssey was there because yet another conspiracy within this conspiracy is that Stanley Kubrick actually directed the moon landings. And the Space Odyssey was his way of telling us that, using the same fancy camera trickery and all of the rest of it. So from this fella's perspective, Stanley Kubrick is in on it, and here he's citing the reasons why he's come to that conclusion, and he will believe that wholeheartedly. Because here's the thing, if you burn yourself alive, it kind of means you believe what you're saying you believe. But from another slightly different perspective, you can argue that, well, Stanley Kubrick was like kind of our guy. He was telling us, he was informing us to the nature of the elites. And in fact, the final film, Eyes Wide Shut, is where people say, well, he died suddenly, didn't he? So people will say, well, actually, he went too far on his final film and he was bumped off, is another conspiracy theory. You can even go into the AI film that he did, you know. So it just depends on where your perspective on all this is. And Maxwell goes on and he says, why were the Manson family murders crawling with cover-ups and intelligence agents? Because our government wanted to make us fear for our lives and believe that hippies are deranged psychopaths. I mean, I don't know enough about all of that to really offer much commentary, but a lot of the hippies are deranged psychopaths. Again, you could interpret that in a different way as well. I mean, the assumption there is that Charles Manson was actually a kind of okay dude. I wouldn't go there. Why did Walt Disney produce a fraudulent documentary that told us lemmings follow each other off cliffs so we would believe it? So it's predictive programming that Walt Disney, who, again, people on the right would assume was somebody wholesome, somebody decent, but whose business was hijacked and turned into this like managerial behemoth to brainwash the world. Why did the Beatles tell us to fear the taxman, to scoff at revolution, chase nonsense conspiracy theories, and that happiness is a warm gun, so we believe it? Why did Easy Rider tell us that the hippie movement was dead so we would believe it? Why did Chinatown end with defeatism in the face of massive corruption so we believe it? Why did George Orwell tell us of a hellish future of totalitarian control that we are powerless to stop so we would believe it? So, George Orwell, that was not a warning about the future, that was also predictive programming in this frame. Why did Wall Street tell us greed is good so we believe it? Again, like Oliver Stone, he was a socialist, so that was the I you can so the standard interpretation of Wall Street would be that it's a kind of socialist critique of neoliberalism and Wall Street shenanigans in the 1980s. But here he's sort of re-engineered that so that it's predictive programming as well. Why did the right thing tell us we are all racially tribalized so we would believe it? And I don't think anybody needs to tell us that. I think, but again, he's got a bit of a leftism peeping through here. The point is, though, all of these things are up for interpretation, and if you burn yourself alive, You've actually gone all in on it. And to refute all of these points, point by point, you're essentially challenging an entire mode of being. And if we can look at somebody like Maxwell Lazzarello here, and think, well, he believed this and he really went all the way and literally burned himself alive for these beliefs. But we are looking at them slightly askance and thinking, but he's kind of onto something, but it's also like bullshit. But that's based on the assumption that we know better. But do we really know better than him? Do we have that kind of conviction? Because at the end of the day, we reach a point where it's impossible to assert truth. And that's what I think's happening here. That's what I think, to go back to my original point, when I was a kid and I had a bad trip on acid, it becomes almost impossible to assert, to kind of create a world picture which is coherent and makes sense, which isn't this, which where you can actually find your way out of the labyrinth, because it seems like we are all in one as well. And then he says, why did Simpsons creator Matt Groening make a comic strip called Life in Hell so we would believe it? So he's pointing to all of these aspects of pop culture, mainly in the late sort of the 80s and the 90s and so on, the late 20th century, as ways to say, well, this was all predictive programming, all leading up to the massive crash that's coming, in which we will end up all being, well, owning nothing and being happy, basically, rather than this kind of incremental collapse because the rulers are just incompetent, let's say. And on and on and on and on, when it comes to any popular media, if you ask yourself the question, why would secret doomsday cult kleptocrats want the public to consume this? You will find your answers. You remember the X-Files as well, which was also like the early to mid-90s, all the way through the 90s really, where the tagline was "The truth is out there." And this is kind of what's burning me out, because I see this as just an endemic part of the internet. And what's interesting as well is that we now see there's massive sort of push to censor everything by the establishment for mis and disinformation. And I do find it interesting that there's a certain point there, because when if your entire society, if your civilization doesn't have any sort of solid, coherent narrative to live by, how does it actually function? Where is truth? What is truth actually grounded in? But I'll come back to that in a moment. And he says, when we piece it all together, we understand the truth. We are in a totalitarian doomsday cult. And he goes on, why on earth would our elites do this? There are many reasons, but the simplest is because capitalism is unsustainable and they knew it. Climate change and resource extraction would catch up eventually, so they never intended to sustain it. They knew all along that they would gobble up all the wealth they could and then yank the rug out from under us so they could pivot to a hellish fascist dystopia. But you see, again, like if you look at the climate change agenda and Agenda 2030 and the carbon reduction, that in and of it, he is coming at this from the perspective that climate change is a real thing. But yet there's other theories out there that will say, well, that's just all nonsense. It's all just natural. It's all nature. And it's being used as a totalitarian, yep, here we are again, a totalitarian grab by the elites who are going to, use climate lockdowns. They're going to control what cars we can drive and your carbon footprint. And it's all this sort of giant grift that they're going to use to basically bring in what he is warning about here, but from a different angle. So you have like a multitude of conspiracy theories competing against each other, where people will believe a part of this one. They will believe in the outcomes. The outcomes are always bad. The outcome is always that we're going to be ruled over by a totalitarian kind of managerial hell state. But how we get there and how they're doing it is all completely different and undermines the kind of priors of each. And John Carpenter, who's got a great Substack, he was going through this manifesto, if you want to call it that. And he had some very good thoughts on where we are and what is happening with this. It was a really great article. I'll link it in the comments below. And he says the inevitable result is that we have become ontologically fractured. Our collective picture of reality is a shattered mirror, a million different fragments in which we can't even agree on basic facts. All of us are left trying to assemble something coherent out of this mess and frequently cutting our fingers on the shards as we pick them up and try to fit them together. Now that generative AI deepfakes are in the picture, it only gets worse. Every digital image or video you see could be a fake. The only way to know something happened is to see it with your own eyes. Everything else reverts to hearsay and rumor, as it has been for most of our species' history. And this kind of brings us back to forming a picture based, as he would say, on these shattered shards of a mirror, trying to piece it all together, and so that it functions, so that we have a way to understand the world, which is becoming what seems to be impossible. One of the interesting things about all of this is that we can't nobody will make an appeal to an expert because we all know the experts are corrupt and will just do whatever their paymasters tell them to do. So we had example here in all of this is that the big thing that people are talking about at the moment, which I see everywhere, is this idea of chemtrails. And the problem is it makes so much demands on your time. So here we go, you have to call it cloud seeding. So does the technology exist? Yes, it seems to. So that's step one. Are they then you, what well, why are they doing it? What is it for? Why, for example, in countries like England or Ireland, which are where it rains all the time, why do they have to make it rain more? Well, this leads on to a second part where, well, the idea is they want to destroy the farmland so that they can buy it up on the cheap, and then they will be able to have complete control of the food supply. And this will further the agenda that we can end up in the totalitarian hellscape state again. But in order to refute that, you have to then become an expert on. You have to become a climatologist. You have to become an expert on how farms work, or the subsidies and compensation schemes which are offered to farmers. And who has the time for all of that? And if you can't trust the experts, then well, what do you do? Well, what you do is just try and cobble together whatever you find on the internet. And here's the thing, it may be right. In the same way that when I was in a teenager, it actually turned out that people were trying to drive me mad. So it often is sinister. It often is the case, but maybe it isn't. And so we have this uncertainty. We begin from a position of uncertainty. We try to get to a truth. A lot of the times, the people who are feeding us that truth have their own issues, their own agendas. And so it's in a way, it is disinformation. I mean, it is. Nobody really knows for certain what's going on, because how can one conspiracy be true, which then negates the rest? Like, where does all this go? Where another thing is, like, where do you spend your time? Do you spend the next 2 or 3 years of your life researching like clouds and cloud seeding technology and policies affecting farms? Or do you kind of say, well, and then at the end of it, still end up no further forward? Or and think about everything that you lost in the meantime. And so you can't really refute it, and you can't really say that it isn't true. And so you end up in kind of nowheresville. You end up as I don't know. It seems unlikely. Like, do they have the technology? Yes, okay. Does that logically mean that there's now a plot to destroy farmland by making it rain a lot? I find that kind of absurd. but I can't explain it all either. In the same way that I can't actually explain, which is another thing a bit more pleasant, that why did the Simpsons cartoon make all of these predictions? Why is it that Lisa Simpson ran for president and she wore the same suit as Kamala Harris? Or was it predictive programming when Homer went down in the submarine, like what imploded last year? Or how did they get it so right about Donald Trump going down the escalator when he announced he was going to be running for president? Maybe this is all just fake. Maybe it's a lucky guess. Maybe it's because they produce so much content on that show that sometimes things just stick. But the alternative would be this sort of massive psyop that this is like all of history is being planned out, and then they are kind of winking at us. And this term, which I actually also don't really think's a thing, predictive programming. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I do I like it in the case of the Simpsons, maybe it's just a lucky guess. Maybe they're just looking at the zeitgeist and making these kind of predictions based on where things are going and general trends. And what this kind of view from nowhere and everywhere at the same time does is exhaust people. And I think it's kind of interesting to get into the nitty-gritty of what's happening here, because this is the internet which is doing this, and it seems to be getting worse. I mean, conspiracies have always been a thing on the internet, but we're reaching a point where you have to then begin to ask some assumptions about where you're even beginning, and a disconnect, which is the real world. And this is where I think I'll probably start and wrap this up, because what the question that we're trying to ask ourselves is, what are we actually grounded in? If we are grounded in, as the first principle, the world, which are with our family, our wives, our friends, children, the walking the dog, and these most basic things, if that's where you begin, to use a fancy term like epistemologically, then you can add on and add on, and you can say, well, I know this and I know this and I don't know this. But I think what's beginning to happen as we go really far into the internet age is that the grounding of people is somewhere very distant and very far off. And then that becomes the main narrative, and what is actually real and around us in the real world becomes something distant. And so the first port of call becomes the conspiratorial frame, and then as a distant second, it's just the straightforward world around us. Which isn't to say that any of this is true or untrue, but just as a grounding principle, we have to keep it real. I mean, I know it's a cliche to say it, but the problem is there's a tendency to put all of those, as John Carpenter said, the fractured shards of the mirror, to put it together and come up with something which may be real and which kind of makes sense, but at the same time, the person next to you and the person over there and the person over there, they've all done that as well, and they've all got their own truth. And I think we have to just start and look out of the window, and begin from there, because I think this is getting, when you now see people just wandering out and burning themselves alive and people getting wrapped up. I mean, one of the interesting things about this is that there's certain people who I've spoken to, and they like to refer to the rabbit hole, and they say it proudly. That, for example, I would be referred to as a normie from this perspective, because I haven't gone down the rabbit hole. I mean, I've always thought that I was pretty red-pilled on certain issues. I've been around a bit. But no, that's kind of just amateur night. The real rabbit hole is like believing in Satanism and or ancient aliens or all of this, and this kind of what it amounts to is a kind of liquefying of truth and certainty. And so from their perspective, I'm a normie. Everybody's a normie then. Everybody will become a normie relative to everybody else because everybody's got their own truth. Of course, everybody thinks they are like these proselytizing preachers delivering enlightenment to the masses. But then from another perspective, they are themselves just normies. So everybody's a normie. Whereas when you look out your window, and you actually, the actual real normies who still form the bulk of society, all of a sudden, you know what they're going to say, you know what their politics are. But fundamentally, it's because they absorb all of these kind of talking points. I mean, it can be a disaster, like during the lockdowns, and they kind of sheepishly go along with everything. But fundamentally, there's something more grounded and real in that. Even if you think their opinions are cringe, the reason they're cringe is because they're kind of not really invested in that. And it's because their grounding is in the real world and not off on a distant planet. They begin their assessment from what the BBC is telling them, what the newspaper is telling them. But really, when it comes down to it, it's just about being in the real world and being a normie. And I've actually begun to think that's more healthy and more wholesome than being completely far, far down the rabbit hole. Because the problem with rabbit holes, if you've got a small dog that I have, is that they're not actually fun places to be down. You often cannot find your way back out. So thanks for listening, folks, and I'll catch you later.